Hey everyone, welcome to At the Letters. It is August the 14th, 2024. I'm Ben Nicholson-Smith, joined by Arden Swelling. We're going to talk Toronto Blue Jays as per usual, but the team has really changed a lot since we last spoke, on this podcast at least. Arden, as you've been watching the Jays in the couple of weeks post-trade deadline, it's a new-look team. What is standing out to you?
Yeah, it's interesting to look at some of the lineups that are being rolled out there, and then even just to like look at the roster as a whole. And I kind of did this exercise earlier today where I looked at the, you know, who's like on this 40 on the position player side. We could even do this on the pitching side, particularly in the bullpen, but just on the position player side, just as an example, who's on this roster who's like a lock to be in the opening, on the opening day roster 2025, assuming they're in the organization and they're healthy. So you think George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, Dalton Varsho, Alejandro Kirk, and is there anybody else who's a lock beyond those five? Spencer Horwitz, pretty close, but I mean, lock to be on the opening day roster next year. I really think it's like those five and then sort of a half, maybe 75, 80% for Spencer Horwitz.
Yeah, I think Spencer Horwitz is close to a lock. The way he's playing right now is certainly putting him in that conversation.
There's another drive to right field. Adell is back. This one's going to go. Back-to-back home runs for the Blue Jays. For Spencer Horwitz, his sixth of the season.
At the same time, hey, if he has a really bad 6 weeks, then that could change things depending on what the complexion of the offseason looks like. He would have options remaining next year, so I would agree with that. You know what? I would say Ernie Clements a lock.
Yeah,
I would throw him in there.
That's fair.
Because he's out of options, partly.
Yeah.
But the point stands. You run out of names pretty quickly.
Right. And so that's a position player roster that's going to run 13 deep on opening day. And if we'll throw in Ernie, even throw in Spencer Horwitz, that's seven guys. Like, that's only just over half. So for as different as the Blue Jays roster looks right now, it could still look much different come March 28th, 2025, whenever the opener is next year.
It should. Yeah. I mean, if they want to compete, they're going to need a lot more pitching. So it definitely should look different. It's interesting, like thinking about locks where, you know, you think about like my, and I still do this sometimes too, so I'm sure other people do it as well, but sometimes in my head, I'm like, yeah, you want to have a lock at first, second, third, just all around the diamond. You want to have five just like monsters in the rotation. Closer throws 98, you know, like you just want to have like that certainty in your mind. But it's really hard to do. And I think the Phillies have this. The Phillies are kind of that classic team where like they just have a regular at every position and they've just
got five. The Braves a little bit too. Right.
A little bit. I mean, less so now because they have so many injuries. But when they're healthy, like they could be in that category. The Dodgers when they're healthy. But this year, the Dodgers even have been like mixing and matching and their rotations lost all kinds of guys. They're DFAing great players. And it's just like they're figuring things out on the fly constantly. Whereas I think 29 teams have to do that. And the Jays are certainly not in that Phillies category where they just have plug and play. It's Bryce, Realmuto, Castellanos, Trey Turner. Like they just go down the list. And so I think it's just part of Major League Baseball in 2024. But you still want to trend more towards certainty when you can. And it is always helpful if you can get to that spot.
Yeah, and you could be successful that way too. Like the Rays have been doing it for a very long time. And there's even a bunch of teams that are just sort of maybe three or four deep with locks. Like you think of how well Cleveland's performed this year. Well, it's Naylor, Jimenez, Ramirez, and Kwan, obviously, yep, for sure. But then otherwise they're sort of mixing and matching from there.
Yeah.
You know, the Brewers have been pretty good this year. So yeah, Willie Adames and Joey Ortiz, Rhys Hoskins. I mean, who else is a solid lock every day in the top half of that order? So yeah, there's a lot of teams that sort of only get halfway there. This ideal of the team that has eight or nine regular everyday dudes, like that's just not realistic in 2024 baseball. I think you're right. I think there's going to be the exception, like the Phillies or the Braves when they're healthy, but everyone else is going to need to go pretty deep into their 40. They're going to need to have plenty of churn at the end of their roster. Guys coming off waivers are going to need to be, you need optionable players, particularly in the bullpen for sure, but even towards the end of your bench as well. You need that upper level organizational minor league depth to kind of let AAA essentially be an extension of your 26 man roster. Like, you've got your 26 who are in the majors every day, but then at AAA, you've got 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, 32.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a great way to go. And so what the Jays can do down the stretch here, and what they're already doing, is they can absorb some bad performances. I mean, in some cases, like with Will Wagner, who we'll get to in a minute here, the performance has been just great. And there's, you know, absolutely, you know, the perfect debut pretty much out of the gate. In other cases, like Joey Loperfido, who came over in the same trade, it's gone in the total opposite direction. He's striking out half his plate appearances. He's cutting off Dalton Varsho in the outfield. It is not going well, but you can absorb that. You can see what happens. And one of the things that you can also do is you can have a roster that's not as functional. Like, it's not totally optimized from like a game situation standpoint. And what I mean by that is you can have a ton of left-handed bats on the bench, for example. Like, the Jays actually have a lot of lefty bats between Barger, Horwitz, Loperfido, Wagner. These guys aren't necessarily complementary to one another in the sense that they wouldn't platoon with each other. I guess Davis Schneider could be the other side of that coin, but you can run with that for 6 weeks or 2 months, even if it's not super efficient.
Yeah, and part of it too, I think, is exposing some of these players to novel stimulus. So maybe it's not the best thing if certain guys are at certain positions. Maybe it's not the best thing if certain guys are followed by other guys in batting orders. Maybe it's not the best thing if you have Dalton Varsho or Joey Loperfido facing a bunch of lefties, but take this opportunity to find out in those situations and to expose those players to places where, yeah, maybe the percentages aren't in your favor because you don't need to win every coin flip at this time. Like, you don't need to find that extra percent in every matchup and every deployment. Like, you have an opportunity here to see players in different situations, make them a little bit uncomfortable, see how they respond, and really figure out what you have going into 2025. Because look, like, just the results over the final, I don't know how many games are left, like 45 or something like that. Just the results over these final however many games, like, they aren't going to tell us that much. Like, Will Wagner's 5-for-8 and Joey Loperfido's 5-for-30 or whatever it's been. Like, these, you know, neither of those things are as real as the other. Like, Joey Loperfido isn't as overmatched as he's looked, and Will Wagner isn't as automatic as he's looked. And those results could continue for a few weeks, and that's not going to tell us as much as the swings that those guys take against certain pitchers, the approach, the pitches that they take, the chase, the, you know, how they go through things in the field at maybe positions that they haven't played a ton before. You mentioned Loperfido cutting off, you know, Varsho, right? Like, some of those things, like, that's what you'll actually learn from, is putting these guys in places that they're not used to and just exposing them to some unfamiliar circumstances and getting them to learn from those.
And just on Will Wagner, while we're discussing him and others here, it is really impressive what we've seen from him. So a couple games in, as we record this here on August 14th, he's played two major league games. He's got multiple hits in both of them. He's choosing good pitches to swing at. They're strikes. He is not swinging at balls. He's making good contact. He's doing all the things that he is supposed to do as a professional hitter, all the things that allowed him to have really, really good results at AAA before getting the call up to the major leagues. So this is exactly what you want to see. But I mean, and I don't want to make this like too negative here, because honestly, the Jays have been way more fun to watch. I don't know about you, Arden, but like, I'm actually enjoying watching this team a lot more recently. Just as an aside here, I think it's a lot of fun to watch this group. But you look at Davis Schneider from a year ago, and people were nicknaming him Babe because it was like Babe Ruth, you know?
Not people. Brendan Belt was nicknaming him that. Well, not just anyone, all right? Somebody who knows what he's talking about when it comes to right hitters.
And like, whatever, you got to have fun. Like, you know, I'm not trying to fault Brendan Belt for doing that. But it illustrates how far things have shifted in a year where no one's walking around making Babe Ruth comps on Davis Schneider anymore. And Davis Schneider can still is and still can be a useful major league player. That's great. He's worked hard to get to where he is. He's still helped the team this year, but he has had to make adjustments. And that will happen for Will Wagner too, because think about Kevin Biggio when he first came up. Sometimes these guys, even Horwitz, who's making adjustments successfully at the major league level, it is a constant chess match with these opposing pitchers and game planners and everything that goes into a major league game. So Wagner has challenges ahead of him.
Yeah, and it's really not so much about what you've done. It's about how teams project what you're going to do going forward. And I think the Blue Jays are just a lot higher on Joey Loperfido than the industry is. And Will Wagner is what, he's like 26 at this point. Like, the Houston Astros aren't like a dumb organization. If they really felt like they had the next Babe Ruth, they would have brought him up and they would have played him, and they likely wouldn't have included him in the Kikuchi deal as the third piece. But to my point of like it mattering what you project to do rather than what you have done, Joey Loperfido projects for an 85 weighted runs created plus next season via Zips. Will Wagner projects for an 83. So we're talking about two guys who project relatively similarly. And I would imagine that the Blue Jays, projections aren't going to be exact to what Zips is, but they won't be too far off. I would imagine the Blue Jays project these guys relatively similar going forward. That's probably why they're playing a lot right now, because the Blue Jays want to test them and kind of see like what they have and kind of expose them to a bunch of big league pitching and see how they respond and see how just the way they play could impact those projections going forward. So the results right now, extremely disparate between the two. But I think when the Blue Jays assess things and think about what they expect from them going forward, I actually don't think the results they expect from the two would be all that different.
Right. And with Loperfido, despite, a bit of a misstep on the weekend, cutting in front of our show, he's still just getting used to the new teammates and new environment. There's pressure that comes with being traded. Obviously has an impact on Will Wagner, who's doing great, but of course there's pressure. No one would expect that Loperfido would continue to strike out 50% of the time moving forward. Now, it probably can't be 37% of the time. He's probably got to really cut it down, maybe into the high 20s. But you pair that with his defensive ability, because we've also seen him make some really good catches in the outfield. And this is someone who's got definitely the ability to do better things. And then, you contrast that with Will Wagner, and take nothing away, he's done exactly what he should with the pitches that he's seen. But, some of the pitches, like on Monday in his debut, there are a couple of hanging sliders there, that were 84, 85 in the middle of the zone, and he barreled them up and made great contact. But you're not going to get those every single game. Sometimes the pitcher just isn't going to hang a pitch to you and you're at bat. Sometimes the pitcher is going to execute. It's going to be 96 at the top of the zone, and it's going to be sliders below the zone, and you're going to have to figure out a way to produce despite that. So yeah, definitely these guys, both super intriguing. And I think this is why you make that trade for Yusei Kikuchi, because and pair it with Jake Bloss. Like, this is, we liked it at the time. I continue to think that looks like a really, really good trade.
Yeah, the league's eventually going to figure out what you like and what you don't like, and they're going to start giving you a lot more of the latter and a lot less of the former. Addison Barger has seen the fourth lowest percentage of fastballs in baseball since it came up. That's pretty clearly, teams have figured out, hey, this guy's hunting heaters. This guy is trying to be really aggressive against fastballs. Why would he give him that pitch? And he's not being super stingy either with breaking balls outside the zone and with chasing. So we're going to throw him breaking balls that he can chase until he stops doing that. And he hasn't stopped doing it yet, which is why he hasn't seen more fastballs. Ernie Clement, earlier this year, like, he got off to a good start, and teams figured, oh, hey, this guy's hunting heaters. And Ernie would actually just tell you, yeah, I was hunting heaters. That's what I was trying to hit. So the league stopped giving him fastballs, and Ernie really struggled against breaking balls through May and some of June. And it was something that he really had to dive in on with Blue Jays hitting coaches. And he worked with Matt Haig to just kind of slow down his swing against breaking balls and not pull as many of them. And he turned around his results against breaking balls in a huge way over the last few months. And it's part of why he's done better, and why his results have been what they've been over the last 6 to 8 weeks. weeks because he just got better at laying off the breaking balls that he can't hit, getting better results on the ones that he can. And that's now forced pitchers to give him more fastballs, which is what he actually wants in the end. So yeah, there's going to be adjustments to come for Loberfido and Wagner. The thing that interests me about Wagner particularly is that it's just like, it's that hit profile that the Blue Jays love. Like, this is just their type, is the low chase, high contact, pretty good hard hit, you know, great hand to eye, puts a lot of balls in play, really good strike zone management, judges balls from strikes well, low chase rates, professional plate appearances, doesn't give away pitches, doesn't take anything off.
And Dad really was good. A major leaguer.
Right. Yeah.
That, also on their checklist.
Also, and really good barrel control too. Like a guy who, when he does swing, tends to get the sweet spot to the ball more often than most players. Like, it's fun if you take the chase rate, the contact rate, the hard hit rate of Will Wagner this season and line it up with Spencer Horwitz, it's off by like one percentage point in each category. If you line it up with Justin Turner, it's off by like one percentage point. If you line it up with Alan Rodon, it's off by like 1 or 2 percentage points. Yeah. I mean, this is their guy. This is the hit profile that the Blue Jays really, really covet.
And how about swinging at the first pitch and comes up with a big league hit, his first at bat, and he's headed for second base. How about that? Not wasting any time. Who said he's nervous? What a job by Will Wagner. And you look, everybody on the bench is thrilled. He put a swing on that one.
Absolutely fantastic.
Well, and Horwitz, like the comp seems like especially good with Horwitz because they're both 26. They played against each other in college. They're both left-handed hitters. They're both kind of, I don't want to say undersized, but like 5'10", 5'11 range. They're both like late round picks. They had amazing results at AAA. This is kind of, I see a lot of Spencer Horwitz in Will Wagner. And Spencer Horwitz is emerging as a pretty good major league player. Now, with either one of these guys, I don't know if they can hit lefties. So maybe you need to have a David Schneider, like you kind of getting David Schneider on track would be really helpful as like a lefty masher. Maybe that guy comes in free agency. I don't know. But I see similarities there. And that's not a bad thing because Horwitz has been pretty good.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is in 2025, I don't know that you can have a roster that contains all of Clement, Schneider, Horwitz, Wagner, Loperfido, Jimenez, Barger. Like, that's 7 guys. And realistically, if you're going to contend, like, it's nothing against any of those guys. I think they could all be league average players. I think they could all be between that like 90 to 110 weighted runs created plus. But if you have all those guys on your roster, then you're going to need like the, you know, to have 3, 4, 5 other guys that are 120, 130, 140 weighted runs created plus. Like, everyone else better be really, really, really good if the majority of your roster is guys with somewhat limited ceilings who are solid players, could put up like a 1.5 win season. I mean, you're going to need the rest of your position player roster to be providing like 3, 4, 5 win seasons. And outside of like, obviously Vlad, I think, you know, so much of our show's value is tied up in defense. We'll see what George Springer can be next year, another year older. We'll see if Alejandro Kirk can bounce back from this year and kind of, you know, be better offensively with a higher workload next year. And then we'll see what comes with Bo Bichette. I just ultimately don't think the Blue Jays can carry all of those players that I listed on a roster that's going to perform better offensively next year than it did this year.
Yeah, agree completely. I mean, those are good players to have on your 40-man or potentially use in trades. If that's your full lineup, especially because, you know, George Springer, he's a below average offensive player at age 34 with an 89 OPS plus. Last year was 102. Next year, you would have to expect that he would once again be a below average offensive player. Maybe he has a hot month like he did. That's great. But on the whole, what we've seen the last couple of years is a below average offensive player from Springer. So we're not going to expect that to change. You're not going to expect Kirk to change. And you're not going to expect Varsho, after 2 years of being a below average offensive player, to be anything different than that. And Varsho's a great player. Like, Varsho's a star player. You know, with the defense, every week, maybe every game, he's making a difference out there. He's incredible. But offensively, he's not going to be your cleanup hitter. So, and even with Bichette, you have questions. So really, it's Vlad. Vlad is the only guy out of this entire group internally that you would say, oh, and including Aralvis too, like he's the only guy that you would say there's really certainty that Vlad Jr. is going to be a impact major league hitter. And I have more certainty in that than we've probably ever had with Vlad Jr. just because the heater he's been on has been incredible in the season and just the career. He's a great hitter. But you need more than that, and that's where they do need to add a bat this winter.
Yeah, I forgot about Aralvis, who's in this mix as well and who we'd be seeing playing regularly right now if he hadn't been suspended. A Jonathan Class A is going to enter this conversation at some point later this season, and Alan Rodin could enter the conversation if the Blue Jays want to test him later, but I just don't know if they'll have the runway for another young guy who's going to be getting regular plate appearances. You know, the roster only expands by one. This is that kind of year where I'm sure the Blue Jays would have rather that the roster is expanded by 40 as they used to. Because remember that year where they brought up like everyone but Dalton Pompey? It could be one of those years, right? Where they just bring up everybody to get that experience and to kind of see what it's like in the big leagues. It's the Blue Jays going to have to add this offseason at least, I would say, one hitter, if not two. Maybe there's a trade in there as well that like has a hitter leaving and another coming back, or two hitters leaving and one more impactful hitter coming back. We'll see what shape this all takes. But these open auditions the Blue Jays are holding right now, and a lot of just like the proving ground that kind of is the Blue Jays everyday lineup right now, come April next year, it's going to look a lot different. And a number of the players who are playing regularly right now for the Blue Jays are not going to be playing regularly for the Blue Jays in April.
Yeah. And look, best case scenario, they add a couple bats in the offseason and everyone's healthy, and a bunch of these guys are playing at Triple-A Buffalo, and the Jays have a really, really good layer of offensive depth at Buffalo. The Bisons are mashing, and they can call on them when they need them, and you have those reinforcements. Like, that's the best case. But some of these guys will be injured, so that's where, you know, it even further reinforces the need for an add on the position player side this winter. I think especially, this is almost the first time I think I've thought of it this way, but, you know, you look at who in this lineup you can project as, like, a real difference maker. Pairing someone with Vlad who can do that would be big. And I guess like just initially here, as you know, tons is going to change by the time they actually make these moves. But do you see a certain position or a certain, like, I tend to probably tilt right-handed, although a switch hitter, I could almost go any way. Like, actually, I'm going to say a switch hitter would be the ideal for like a middle of the order bat, but maybe like a right-handed bench complement as well. I don't, where do you land on this? Like Chapman, Teo, there's some names out there, some familiar faces. Like, what do you think would be the on paper good fit?
Yeah, it's interesting how lefty heavy the Blue Jays have suddenly gotten between Varsho, Horwitz, Wagner, Loberfido, Barger. You know, I don't know. Nathan Lucas should get on this roster at some point. I'll feel really bad if he doesn't. Rodin's a lefty as well. I know Lucas is back from the IL and going through a rehab assignment right now. He would have been up here so long ago if he was healthy. Remember when I was advocating in spring, I was like, can the Blue Jays just please trade this guy to somewhere where he's got to have an opportunity and where he's going to have a clear pathway to playing time? Like, I feel so bad for him. He's like 30 now, and he's just like, he rakes at Triple-A and he's just never gotten that runway at the big league level, and he just keeps being this kind of on option dude waiting for his opportunity. And like, I just feel really bad that he's just seeing his career pass by and he's not at least in the big leagues earning service and pay. But I think for me, like, handedness aside, position aside, like, you just need somebody with some power upside. Like, you need somebody with some power potential, because that's what's really missing in this lineup. And even, you know, Loberfido, we'll see. Wagner and Horwitz aren't going to be huge power guys. Like, double-digit home runs, certainly, but not, you know, 25, right? When you just look at how this roster projects for next year, like, where is your power coming from outside of Guerrero and Bichette, who, like, yeah, Bichette can be,
but even
20
Bichette.
Plus. He could be 20-plus. I'd give him that. Varsho can be around 20. Vlad, obviously, could be like 35. But outside of them, I don't know. Aralvis Martinez has a ton of power, but how much is he going to be on the roster next year? You know, I think just you're probably help. Forgetting that Bo had like a 29 homer season at 23, you know, and then he had 24 at 24. I think that he could hit 30 with a really good year at 27.
Yeah, he could. I'm well aware of the ceiling. I'm just saying that, you know, with Bichette, we don't know how close he's going to be to reaching that ceiling because it has been some time since he was at that ceiling. So it's not, I just don't think that it's a lock it in. Bo Bichette is back. Like, I want to see it for at least a few weeks before going into the offseason with the certainty that Bo will be that power complement to Vlad.
And you might not see it this year, but I think that, like, the track record is strong enough that I'm willing to bet on him being pretty good next year. If Bo comes back next year and he has another year like this one, like, okay, you got to worry at that point.
Yeah.
At that point, it's what has gone wrong here. Oh, my goodness. But I think that right now the expectation has to be that with a sound offseason, getting healthy, that Bo Bichette can get back to the, like, 125, 130 Wade runs created plus that he's guy that he's been in the past.
I agree. I also just think, like, one of the lessons from last offseason, and I think this Jays season has humbled, you know, a lot of people when you talk to people around the team, because no one wanted it to go this way. No one expected it to go this way. And I think one of the lessons that some people are probably grappling with from this season is, well, wait a second. We thought that we would be able to turn around Vlad, Springer, Kirk, and Varsho, and they're 1-for-4 in that category. So when it comes to getting the most out of this team's offensive players, specifically with the power side of things, you know, internally, I'm sure they have confidence in their people. But as I look at this from the outside, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I just don't know that with Bo Bichette, it's a lock and load. Of course, I think Bo Bichette's going to be a good hitter next year. Of course. Like, there's way too much history there. He's going to be a young guy. He's going to be in his prime, super motivated. I believe in Bo Bichette. I think he's going to be a good hitter. But specifically when it comes to power, I'm not going to sit here and say that I think that they're definitely going to unlock something and that he's going to be, you know, 25, 30 homers again.
Yeah, I would bet on him getting back to that. But yeah, we'll see, right? I think that the real troubling one there is Varsho, who hit 27 homers in his final year in Arizona. He was 25 and he hit 27 homers. And I think part of the gambit for the Blue Jays with Varsho was, not only are we going to get this spectacular defender and not only are we going to get a lefty bat in our lineup, but if he hit 27 homers in his year coming here, like, it's safe to expect 25 going forward. And he's been healthy. He's been playing every day regularly, and he hit 20 last year, and he's sitting on 14 right now. So maybe he gets back to 20 this year. If you've got him going from 27 in his final year in Arizona, taking decreases each year as he gets into what should be his prime, 26, 27, 28, that is a poor outcome. Like, that is troubling, because that's now 2 years in which the home run numbers have dropped off. You were expecting that Varsho could be at least the home run hitter that he was in his final year with Arizona, with perhaps even a little bit more upside to go beyond where he'd been.
Yeah, the power, you know, there was a belief, there was a hope that the power could be greater than what it has been. Now, that being said, so Varsho, after this season, he has 2 more years with the Jays. If you could lock and load his production offensively, defensively, and base running for the next 2 years to be essentially what it has been the last 2 years, which would mean conceding that he's a below average hitter in the major leagues, would you do that?
I think you have to, because the defense is so good. The base running is unquestionable, but I think the hope was that he would be a better hitter than he's been. Like, You go back to that last year in Arizona, like, it just when the trade was made and you see a guy who hit 27 homers with a 107 weighted runs created plus in his age 25 season, playing every day at a defensively demanding position. Like, he was worth 4.5 wins in 22.
He was catching at that point too, to some extent.
The belief had to be, whoa, we take away this guy's catching workload, we let him play outfield every day, we put him around George Springer and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. Like, this guy should, there is potential here for him to get better than where he's been. And offensively, he has not gotten better, he's gotten worse. So that, you know, to me, that's not the outcome the Blue Jays thought that they were getting when they traded Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for him. To take nothing away from what is platinum glove defense, great base running, and just incredible heady baseball IQ and absolute like 99th percentile effort at all times.
Yeah, yeah. He's a guy you want on your team for sure. And I think part of the problem too is like the Jays went out when they had an elite defensive center fielder who bats left-handed, and they got another elite defensive center fielder who bats left-handed, and neither one of those guys is really that much of a hitter. And again, Kevin Kiermaier, total pro, and wish him the best with the Dodgers, but it just wasn't, in hindsight, it's easy to say now, but it really wasn't an efficient use of that money, of those roster spots. And now going into 2025, to me, Dalton Varsho's just got to be the center fielder, full stop. That's it. You don't even mess around. And then if you're looking for upgrades, it's second, third, it's left DH. That's kind of where you're looking.
And I think that the Kiermaier acquisitions, both years, speaks to the Blue Jays' expectation that Varsho is going to take another step offensively. Because it was, okay, we can get the elite center field defender who there is no reasonable reason to expect is going to be an above average offensive contributor, because we have Varsho, whose defense like in center is incredible. So in left, it's going to be great. And who we expect to perhaps flirt with 30 home runs in 2023 at 26 after he hit 27 the year prior at the age of 25.
Well, bottom line, I think we both agree, and probably everyone listening agrees, that the Blue Jays need to find some power if they can this offseason. But that's only half the equation for the Jays. We still haven't talked about pitching. So when we come back on At the Letters, we will pick up this conversation and discuss the state of the Blue Jays pitching staff. Listen to At the Letters ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. Welcome back to At the Letters. And I spoke too soon. We nearly moved on from the position players, but we haven't really given Vlad Guerrero Jr. his full credit and his full due here. So before we move on to the pitching, we do want to take a moment here and discuss Vladdy. I mean, this is peak Vlad Guerrero Jr. that we're seeing right now. He is hitting for average. He is controlling the strike zone. He is making great power. He's using the entire field. He's even making some good defensive plays. We've seen him this good in 2021. So I'm not going to say I've never seen him this good as a hitter, but as a complete player and as a guy who seems to be growing into a, you know, gradually more of a leadership role with this team, holding back George Springer, you know, and among other things, it's a complete version of a really, really, really good player.
Yeah. And like, I think that you can look at the Wade Runs Created Plus, and that tells you that this is the 2021 guy, because the numbers are almost identical in the mid 160s range. So if you want to knock him for playing in minor league parks in 2021, well, WRC plus adjusts for ballpark. And if you want to knock him for the fact that his slugging percentage is less this year than it was in 2021, well, Wade Runs Created Plus adjusts for offensive environment. So I think that metric in particular does a really good job of showing us that Vlad is at least meeting, if not exceeding, his best level of play in his career.
Swing and a drive. Get up, ball. Get out of here. And this one is gone. He is locked in indeed. Number 24 for Vladdy Guerrero Jr. And he absolutely smoked that one.
Yeah, it's impressive, because that's such a high level. So few players ever get to that level. And he's been there now two of the last four seasons. You look at just his season numbers, hitting 320 with a 939 OPS, 24 bombs, on pace to push past 30 for the third time in his career. This is, I mean, I'm not saying anything new in saying this here, but the future of Vlad Guerrero Jr., what happens here with this team, the possibility of an extension, whether the Blue Jays push in with him, which, you know, I would think would have to cost over $300 million as a floor. When you look at Devers, when you look at Tatis, you know, I think that those are more relevant comps, honestly, just given their age and overall offensive output, than your like first baseman. I don't think that Matt Olson and Freddie Freeman really hold up. Just when you compare the ages, it's such a different swath of years that you're getting. And Vlad Jr. is still in his age 25 season. So if you're talking about a long-term extension, he covers his late 20s and his early 30s. That's a good period of time. I mean, he will decline like all players do eventually, but that's potentially a really, really, really good period of time. So I think that, you know, that's the territory that we're talking about here. He's put himself back into that elite conversation. And we don't have to sit here today and hammer out the specifics of exactly how many dollars or whether we'd say go or pass, but you've got to be thinking seriously about this if you're the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, and the best comp we're going to get is that Devers one. 10 years, $313 million signed when Devers was 26. So, I mean, this is just as close as you're going to get. And then, you know, where the adjustments will come will be with inflation and positions and projections and whatever value you can put on just Vlad being the face of this franchise and moving a ton of merchandise. And, you know, it come down to makeup and all kinds of things the teams are going to factor into these decisions. But I think from the outside looking in, that is the closest comp that you're going to find, the best comp, 10 years, 313. So I would imagine that that's a pretty fair estimate to start at, and that likely it ends up somewhere around there if it happens, with whatever options and opt-outs and deferrals get built in, which would obviously move the value in either way. And look, we're going to talk about that ad nauseum for the next, I don't know, 2, 4, 8, 12 months. Who knows how long it'll take before this does or does not happen. The cool thing about what's happening right now, I think, and Kevin Gausman kind of put me onto this a little bit because he was talking about Vlad, and he said, like, the most impressive thing to me is the way that he's just staying with his pitch, and the way that his pitch could be a pitch on the outer half, which he drives for power to the opposite field. It could be a pitch on the inner third, which he pulls for power to his left side. It could be a pitch up or a pitch down, which he rockets back up the middle. Like, Vlad's pitch is in so many different quadrants. Like, it's all over the zone because he can cover so much of the plate with his swing, and he's so on balance and his timing is so good that he can get his barrel to so many different pitches. If you look at Vlad's opposite field rate this year, it's the highest of his career. So he is using the whole field in a way that he has not before, as a Major League Baseball player. Like, that's really impressive when you think about how carefully this guy has pitched, how few good pitches he gets to hit, how he is the focus of every opposition's hitters meeting before series, before games. He's the focus of the game plan. He does not have a ton of protection in this lineup. He is the one guy who you do not want to let beat you. He is just pitched so exactly and so carefully, and he is rising to that occasion by doing damage on the few pitches that he gets to hit and doing what he can with those pitches. You know, you look at the major league leaderboard for slugging percentage, the opposite field, and like, Vladdy is top five with some pretty impressive names like Devers, like Aaron Judge, like JD Martinez. That to me and to Kevin Gausman is really the most impressive thing that he's done lately.
Yeah, even think about, all right, like, if you're an opposing manager, when are you making a pitching change? It's probably with Vladdy in mind. You're not making a pitching change because you're so scared of Joey Loperfido or even Dalton Varsho. Like, you're making those changes based on pockets, of course, if there are three lefties coming up and four batters, or based on the hitters who you're just most scared of. So Vladdy is specifically, when it comes to late game matchups, he's going to be facing the pitchers that opposing managers think are going to give him the hardest time, and those pitchers are going to be really dialed in. He's not going to have the platoon advantage a whole lot. He's certainly done a good job against lefties this year, but he's not going to be facing any other teams, Ryan Yarbrough, that's for sure. So, you know, I think that it's even more impressive when you look at it in that context, and you consider just, he doesn't have any, you know, protection's a tough thing to quantify, but it's undeniable that when you look back at 2021, he had Teoscar, he had Marcus Semien, he had a way better version of George Springer, he had a way better version of Bo Bichette. That was a team where maybe he could fly under the radar a little bit, but when he's got Spencer Horwitz hitting cleanup and Ernie Clement hitting second, the game planning, as you said, is going to be very Vlad-centric.
Yeah, you can't just isolate Juan Soto in the Yankees lineup because Aaron Judge hits behind him, right? So you can't really work around Juan Soto because now you got to deal with the guy who's probably going to win the MVP award. So unquestionably, like it's very hard to quantify, but I think that, you know, unquestionably, and according to essentially anyone who's ever played this game, that stuff does matter.
Yeah. And just quickly on Soto, because you mentioned him. So I'm amazed at how well Vlad Guerrero Jr. is hitting. And it's one of the reasons that, as I mentioned earlier, the Jays are a lot more fun to watch these days. They have Vladdy in peak form. They have these younger guys coming up. It is more fun. It's a bit of a release. They're not trying to squeeze everything they can out of Daniel Vogelbach and Justin Turner anymore. It's a lighter vibe. So Vlad's having this great season. He has a 163 OPS plus. We all agree this year is amazing. Juan Soto, career 161 OPS plus. This year, 189. Juan Soto, this is why Juan Soto is going to get 500 plus million. And, you know, with Vlad Jr., the discussion's probably more framed in the $300 to $400 million range. And of course, free agency, Scott Boras, those things factor in as well because open market is a whole different discussion. But Juan Soto, career 161. This guy is unbelievable.
Yeah. The cool thing when I look at the way it runs Create Plus leaderboards is that Brent Rooker is having a better offensive season than Vladimir Guerrero Jr. of all people. Brent Rooker,
yeah.
Who was like a throw-in in a couple of trades earlier in his career. He was designated for assignment at one point by the Royals. I mean, this is a guy that Oakland got for nothing. And he has become like a top five hitter in this game. It's at the age of 28, 29. It's just like another good example of why you never give up on somebody with tools. You never give up on somebody with potential, even though they haven't put it together in their early 20s or even mid 20s. Everybody's progression is a little bit different. Everybody develops at their own pace. And Brent Rooker, just the latest example of somebody who now is like an extremely valuable hitter in this game, who teams were putting on waivers and trying to get off their 40 via DFA not that long ago.
Yeah, absolutely wild. Anything else on Vladdy before we move on to pitching here?
No, it's cool to see the mannerisms come back in the batter's box. You've been talking a bit about just how aesthetically it's more fun to watch the Blue Jays when Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is taking close pitches and he's shaking his head when he's doing his little shuffle or he's jumping back in the batter's box. Like when he's getting a called strike and kind of nodding, like that type of stuff is fun to watch. That's how you know Vlad's extremely confident, extremely locked in. And that's how you know he's sticking to his plan too. Like that's how you know he's really engaged in his plate appearance. He's really thinking through it and thinking along with the pitcher and using some of the like really high baseball IQ that he has that he can really use to his advantage when he's hitting. That's something you saw from him in the minors. He always had a plan and he was making adjustments in ABs. It's not something we've seen as consistently in recent seasons, but it's something that we're seeing like night in and night out right now. And that like aesthetically makes his plate appearances something that's very hard to look away from.
Yeah, those little mannerisms are fun. I've always said that Vladdy is the best slider into second base that I've ever seen. So that's also up there on the list. Really.
He slides into home cool. He slides into third yeah. cool.
His slides into second, I think, are old. I think he is the GOAT of slides into second base.
It's a bit exaggerated. He sells it for sure.
He comes up clapping. He finds the dugout right away. Sometimes he'll slide like too hard, or sometimes he'll slide deliberately slow and do like a slow slide in. Like Trey Turner is probably the GOAT of sliding, period. Like if you're just talking about actual skill, I think Trey Turner is probably the best. But as far as like the fun factor, I don't think that there's anyone else who I'd rather watch slide than Vlad Jr.
Vladimir Guerrero Jr. rips one to right center, and that ball is down. Harris will cut it off just shy of the wall. Head first slide into second by Vladdy.
He often starts his slides at a point where I think a lot of players would still be running. He starts yes. them very early. And he'll do the foot first one too. It's not always head first.
Yeah.
Sometimes he'll start the foot first one from like before the infield, like turf cutout has changed to direction. Yeah. He'll start it there and he'll just like slide on his rear end for like he's going down a slip and slide for what seems yeah. like forever and just land perfectly into the base, already making eye contact with Stuart Brough in the
Exactly. Exactly. Like he's still sliding. sliding and he's already found Stuart Baroa. They're doing the celebration. It's honestly great. So that sort of thing is really fun with Vladdy. I remember like when he was coming up and, you know, I forget who asked him, but someone asked him who his favorite players were to watch and who his favorite players were, period. And of course, like he talks about his dad all the time and he's very well aware of his dad's accomplishments and he wants to match them exactly and all this stuff. But he also mentioned Adrian Beltre, and Beltre, when it comes to the mannerisms, the fun alongside other players, the fun on the field, I do see that from Vlad Jr. And it's fun to see because it can be a little bit contagious.
Yeah. And he, the other thing is that he'll slide in and he'll be looking at his dugout and he'll be celebrating. And then he'll go like absolutely without breaking concentration into like trying to nut tap Marcus Semien, you know, or like just into immediately like trying to josh around with whoever the second baseman is, yeah, like exactly. Trying to, you know, pull down on like Andrés Giménez's glove or something, yeah. Like just totally seamlessly. He's everything all at once, yeah, when he's at second.
Yeah, it's a great time. That's where I almost prefer the slides into second, because at home, then he gets carried away into the celebration and, you know, presuming he scored, or he's calling for a replay, obviously, if he's out. I mean, that maybe is getting a little tired, but you know, we'll allow it because he's so entertaining in other ways.
It doesn't matter how close the play was. It doesn't matter. Right. Like, he has no idea. He's just calling for the replay regardless. And John Schneider knows that.
This is why I say Vlad Jr. has no future as a major league manager, because he'd be out of challenges by the second inning every game. And it would you can't do it. So
no, Adrian Beltre has no future as a manager either, because he would just get fed up. Like he would just get so frustrated and upset. He'd get thrown out of every game.
Now, bench coach, he would be a good vibes bench coach. But anyway, sure. We digress here.
I mean, get ready to do a lot of that over the next 6 weeks, buddy.
Hey, I'm ready. I'm ready. I honestly, like, it's still entertaining to me. Like, the worst is when it's like there's seven games under 500 and it's like everyone knows they're probably not going to make a comeback, but they might. I think that there's a lot more levity around this team. As you see these players.
There has been a level of tension that was very much present prior to the trade deadline, and particularly in the few days leading up to the trade deadline, which I think any Blue Jay will tell you were not a fun few days. That tension is very much lifted, and it is just a lot easier going, and for the worst reasons, right? Because the team has been a failure, because the team was supposed to qualify for the postseason. It was supposed to take a step beyond 89 games. It was supposed to be in a playoff race right now and competing. And it's not. So it's for the worst reason. But that has opened up room for more fun, more hijinks, more just an easier going environment, which is a nice thing.
It is. All right. So pitching. The Jays have these veteran starting pitchers, Berríos, Bassett, Gausman. They are trending toward pretty significant innings totals. Berríos would be on track for 195. Bassett, Gausman, they're on track for around 180, 185. So that's a lot of volume, and you're walking a line here, because on the one hand, this is their profession. This is what they do. You're not going to tell them not to do it. Like, you're not going to totally shut them down barring an injury, but you don't want to, I mean, I would think you don't want to overuse or overtax these guys at all in a season where losses, if anything, are probably good because they help your draft position. And the Jays, I don't know if you've run any of the sim lotteries, Arden. I certainly have.
I'm not
the
there
Jays.
Yet.
They have a chance to finish with a really high pick next year. So losses, you don't want to lose. You always want to play to win. But like, if you do lose, it's not the worst thing in the world. So anyway, how would you handle the innings, the workload for those three veteran starters going into the last 6 weeks of the season?
Well, and if the Blue Jays do want to like put a bit more pressure on that tank button, that is going to be up to them in terms of who they deploy on the field. Because if you put Chris Bassett on the mound, that dude's going to try to throw nine scoreless innings. Like, Jose Berríos does not care where the Blue Jays, like what their percentage chances in the lottery.
I guarantee he has not run the lottery simulator. I guarantee.
Absolutely not. Like, if you put George, you have any question about like the intensity George Springer is still bringing to games right now, which quote unquote do not matter. Look at him on Tuesday night when he gets hit by a pitch and doesn't get first base. Like that's a level of competitor that you're dealing with here. So it will be up to the Blue Jays, but there's an interesting push-pull there, right? With a Bassmit, a Gausman, and a Berríos. Because I don't think you want any of those guys throwing 190 innings this year, but you don't want any of them finishing at like 140, 150 either. Because you mentioned the volume, and these are guys who train for that volume, and part of training for that volume is just throwing that volume year over year. So you don't want them to stop at like 155 this year and then be asked to throw 200 next year. Like, you still want them to get up to a decent level of workload. So I don't think any of those guys need to make 33, 34 starts, but I don't think they should make shy of like 28, 29, 30, if that makes sense. Like, I still think you want them to get to a pretty good workload, but you don't want them to push through anything unnecessarily. So if they miss their final two starts of the year, maybe three on the aggressive side, I think that's kind of the sweet spot to just give them a head start on recovering for next year. You don't want to start that too early.
Yeah, I don't think you want to think about shutting them down now. You want them to be in a mindset where they're still competing. It's interesting, you look at the schedule for the second half of August, and they're about to have an off day on Thursday, the 15th of August. After that, they play every single day in the second half of August, including there's a doubleheader there in Boston. So that's a lot of volume. To me, obviously, you're going to have one. Well, actually, that doubleheader is a suspended game, correct?
Yes.
So, yeah. So you don't actually need a starting pitcher for that suspended game necessarily. You could bullpen game it. But I think you've got to be calling up, whether it's Jake Bloss, whether it's Paolo Espino, whether it's both. You have to be inserting for the back half of August in those last 2 weeks there. You're adding one or two starting pitchers into that mix. Maybe not into the starting rotation, but at least into that mix.
Yeah, I think you want to have a spot start or two in there, certainly. I don't know if it'll be like a permanent six-man configuration, or maybe it's just like a six-man that you run for a couple of weeks. But yeah, I do think that the more you, right now, you kind of start giving a Bassmit, a Gausman, a Berríos an extra day, you know, or an extra two, and you play it out like that. I don't know that you want these guys starting on just 4 days rest every single time out. I think you want to give them a bit more in between starts, because look, we're seeing, like, you can look at some of the pitch modeling too, like Stuff Plus, like we are seeing decreases from all three of those guys. You're seeing velo decreases, you're seeing like command that isn't what it typically is. That was very much the case for Chris Bassitt his last time out, and even he talked about looking up at the scoreboard, and he obviously blamed this on the roof being closed, but this is a guy who's pitched inside a lot. This is a guy who's pitched inside a lot in his career, so I don't know how far I'm buying that, but like, he was looking at the scoreboard and not seeing the same inches of horizontal and vertical movement that he's used to. Kevin Gausman's done a very good job of like getting deep into starts and getting a bunch of outs his last couple of times out without striking anybody out, which is certainly concerning going forward. Like, his velo's been down and his splitter hasn't been getting whiffs the way it has in the past, and like, he's showing that he can still get outs in with those considerations against some pretty weak competition, it must be said. Like, I wonder how that'll go against like an Orioles or a Yankees. But it's been good the last couple of times out. So like, and Jose Berríos earlier this year, like we talked about it, there were definitely warning signs of a correction coming with him earlier this year when he had like a one ERA and a six expected ERA, and he was giving up all kinds of hard contact. So like, the signs are there that these are guys that you should not push beyond what is necessary for them to be positioned well to haul a bunch of innings again next year. I don't think any of these guys should be getting up to 190, 200 innings this year at all.
Yeah, I would make it clear to those guys that, hey, you can pitch all season if you want, but if you're tired, if you want a break, take it whenever you want. Don't do it for the team. Don't be a hero in this. If you want a breather for 2 weeks now, you're good. You want to shut down for the whole season? No prop. I honestly, I would tell them that. And I don't think that they would take the Blue Jays up on that offer. I think they'd say, yeah, I'm good to go. Certainly that's been the pattern so far. But the other thing is, they don't have to adhere to a typical five-man rotation by any stretch. They don't have to do anything. I mean, the Dodgers at times have essentially run a six-man rotation, and that's worked really well for them. The Tigers right now have a two-man rotation. They have Tarik Skubal and Cater Montero, and other than that, it's like Alex Faedo or, you know, Tyler Holton starting for them. And that's not by design. That's not a good thing. That's not where you want to be. But it only I only say that to make the point that you don't have to do a five-man rotation. If you want to just start these guys, you know, once a week for the next 6 weeks, and then they end up at, you know, let's call it 170, 160, 170, 175, like, that's fine. To me, the main thing is the moment there's any sign of fatigue beyond what's normal, if those guys want an extra break, just they need to know that they can have it and it's totally theirs for the taking.
It gets easier when rosters expand in September, obviously. But even for the next couple of months, you can kind of use your optionable guys in the bullpen, whether it's a Ryan Burr or a Zach Pop, to just sneak Apollo Espino onto the roster for a day or something like that. Or if it's Jake Bloss, who, like, the Blue Jays have a plan for the rest of the season, and if he's healthy and effective, that plan will include major league outings. I think he probably gets a couple more at Buffalo, like, and he's still actually kind of building up workload a little bit after he had like that 18-day break between starts. That's why I saw him throw only 50 pitches his last time out. The Blue Jays actually wanted to give him a little breather around the trade deadline. He dealt with like some shoulder fatigue stuff earlier this year. His velocity was a little inconsistent, so I think the Blue Jays just wanted to make sure he wasn't like pushing through anything that he, you know, maybe you would with the Astros when you're in a playoff race, but you don't need to with the Blue Jays, who are in anything but a playoff race. So they actually brought him to Rogers Center right after the trade deadline and kind of got him on the force plates and got him in the pitching lab. And they have all that stuff that they haven't done Eden at Rogers Center now. So they put him through the whole battery of testing, established baselines and things, sorted out what was going on with the shoulder. And now you'll see him kind of slowly build up at Buffalo and likely get to Toronto early September. But that's somebody who the Blue Jays want to see in the big leagues before the end of the season. So one way or another, whether it's taking someone's spot in the rotation, whether it's part of a six-man configuration, Jake Bloss is healthy, and if he's getting outs, you are going to see him in a Blue Jays uniform later this year.
Yeah, and then what that means is that, you know, as whether it's Jake Bloss being inserted, potentially others joining that mix, you're also going to see a lot of pitchers in the bullpen who just aren't established names. There's going to be opportunity. And we saw on Tuesday night against the Angels, Ryan Burr comes in, strikes out the side, his slider's looking great. Awesome. You're going to have days like that where you're glad that the Blue Jays are making room for these guys and creating this opportunity. And you start to think, maybe Ryan Burr can be something for this team. But I'm sure there are also going to be days where it's like, oh my goodness, Jerry Rodriguez just allowed 6 earned runs, or, you know, not to pick on him, but, you know, they're Brennan Little just allowed another grand slam, whatever the case. Eric Swanson. It's, you know, there are going to be moments where it's frustrating as well. But it, you know, similar to what we talked about on the offensive side, they need answers on the pitching side, and they are so far away. You know, it's the offense has questions, but man, does the pitching staff ever have questions as you look forward to 2025.
You know, if you'd said Luis Frias or Jose Kwas, I would have been there with you. Brennan Little is actually someone who I think has pitched himself into a really good position to be in this bullpen next year. Like, the Blue Jays really like him, and I think that he has actually really just made some nice adjustments over the course of the year and gotten the walk rate under control and just learned to trust himself, his stuff in the zone a lot more, and has like a 70% ground ball rate. I think the Blue Jays are really high on him, and I think right now he's positioned really well to be in the bullpen in 2025.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not trying to pick on Brandon Little. Yeah, he's done a nice job for them. Maybe, you know, Tommy Nance, pick him as the guy who's maybe allowing a grand slam in that case. But
hey, can I give you a Tommy Nance thing? Did you expect me to have a Tommy Nance nugget here?
I did not. Ready what do you for got?
It? This guy's curveball, like, just diving into it. Like, this is an outlier pitch. He throws it 85. It's got a ton of spin. And just if you take all the MLB curveballs, they're thrown at 85 miles per hour. None of them have both the horizontal and vertical movement that Tommy Nance's does. Like, this pitch moves a ton. It's an interesting pitch. Like, I see why the Blue Jays liked it. Their model graded it really high. Like, that's why they traded for him. It wasn't just like Yenesis Cabrera's going on the paternity list. Like, we need somebody to fill that spot. I mean, they had Jose Kwas. Like, he could have filled that spot. Brandon Iser, Yerry Rodriguez. Like, they had guys who could have filled that spot. The Blue Jays targeted Tommy Nance because they thought, hey, this guy's curveball is actually a super outliery pitch, and it really is. Like, he can go back to 22 when he was in Miami. His manager at the time, by the way, was Don Mattingly. And there was an outing against the Rays where he threw his curveball like 15 times in a row and struck out 3 in a row with it. So that's my quick Tommy Nance take, is that his curveball is a very interesting pitch.
Yeah. I mean, you need that. You need that sort of intrigue in your bullpen. I should think that having one interesting pitch is kind of baseline for being a major league reliever. I hope you got one. So, you know,
well, I mean, we've seen some guys on the Jays that maybe don't have one. What was Jose Quas's interesting pitch?
I gotta admit, I haven't done a deep dive on Jose Quas yet.
Yerry Rodriguez, what was the interesting pitch?
Yeah, it's a good thing to have. And look, let's hope that Tommy Nance has some great results. That'd be fun to watch down the stretch. Yeah, I think that regardless of what happens with him or with anyone else specifically, when you look at this group as a collective, you've got, and this was illustrated really clearly on a day that Chad Green had pitched twice in a row and Yennesis Cabrera was still on PAT leave. Congrats to Yennesis Cabrera, by the way. And yeah, you're looking at a Zach Pop potentially closing or Ryan Burr potentially closing. So, you know, that's where, man, yeah, they don't have a lot of answers. And you don't need answers if you're a non-contending team in the middle of August, but you need pathways to answers and you need some answers to emerge. And they clearly need to make relief additions a big part of their offseason acquisition plan.
Yeah, and they got to figure out what Jordan Romano is going to be for them in 2025 and just like what he's going to look like on the other side of surgery and whether you're tendering him a contract, whether you're non-tendering him, whether you're trying to find some sort of like a two-year arrangement that you can arrive at with him to allow him to have a little bit of runway to just reestablish his value. Like, you know, we haven't talked about him a lot because he's been kind of out of sight, out of mind, but that's a huge question mark for the Blue Jays going into 2025 is like, is Jordan Romano on this team and what does it look like if he is?
Yeah, exactly. At this point, certainly hard to count on him pitching in 2024 again. And doesn't seem to be trending super fast toward a return this season. So then it is, yeah, I would personally do a 2-year deal if I was the Jays. I think that would be fair. And I think he'd be open to that. So I think that'd be a good fit. Swanson, to me right now, he's earning $2.75 million this year. He would probably earn a slight bump off of that, not a big one, into next year. To me, I'd be seriously considering a non-tender the way he's pitched. But I don't think you have to make that decision now. I think this is, you know, you play it out. You see what he looks like. You see if he has a good couple weeks at the end of September, it all changes. But to me, I think anything's on the table there.
I think it's a possibility, and I think you're right to raise it. But also for the Blue Jays, like with the resources that they have, I think that whatever it goes up to from 2.75, it goes to 2.9. I don't think that that should be something that the Blue Jays are looking at as, oh man, we really need this money. Like, to me, I would be willing to take that bet just considering the track record with Eric Swanson. I'd be willing to get just right off this year with everything that's happened and gone wrong from him, essentially from the jump. And I would be willing to bet on him getting back to, you know, if not like the borderline elite level that he was at the past, to very, very good level, providing value as a seventh, eighth inning reliever.
I get that. I get that. And I'm open to that. I would be open to that. I just think as a front office, you want to have confidence in your ability to identify pitching. And if you have $3 million to spend and prominent innings to distribute, like that's going to be an appealing job. You can sign guys. So it's not like you can't use that elsewhere. I certainly think they should spend as a way to use their money and use their financial might to improve their team and spend on relievers specifically. I just don't know that it has to be on Eric Swanson.
But do you think that they could get Eric Swanson upside for $3 million on the open market?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you can, like if you see like a free agent who you think has better upside and better likelihood of hitting than Eric Swanson, then yeah, absolutely. Non-tender and use the money for that guy.
Yeah.
I haven't done a deep enough dive to figure out if that guy will be out there for $3 million next year or not.
Yeah. I think at the end of every offseason, you just, you know, it's January and you have to be patient, but it's January the 25th. You know, spring training's 3 weeks away. There are 12 relievers who aren't signed and you like two or three of them, you know, like at that point you can do some damage if you're willing to spend, because teams kind of stop spending. The money kind of dries up at that point in the winter. If you're willing to spend still, you can get guys for sure. You don't even necessarily have to wait that long. Like you can also, and that's just for one spot because they're going to have to add multiple relievers. I think philosophically, sometimes the Jays as a team have gotten too value oriented and they have waited too long to just like, oh, well, we can get Justin Turner for 13, so we're not going to get Jock Peterson for 15. It's like, just get the guy you want. At a certain point, you just have to get the guy you want. But I think that that applies in some situations, but I also think that there are situations where you can be more value oriented, and I think filling out a bullpen is one of those.
No, yeah, and I think that's totally fair. But like the Blue Jays organizationally, they need to be gaining value in every deal. Like that's just their modus operandi. Like that's the way they do business. I don't think they need to. They want to.
Yeah,
they feel that they need to.
Yeah, I think that. I think at a certain point, like this is where, you know, like let's take Dave Dombrowski, who's probably on the other end of the spectrum from like a Guardians, right? Because the Guardians, and at this point, that's quite distant from Shapiro and Atkins. But the Guardians, they're a team that they are going to, the Rays have been described like this too, where it's like you're dealing with Neander, you're dealing with Chernoff. Like those guys sometimes want to win a trade. Mm-hmm. And that's really important to them. And look, the Guardians have an amazing team and an amazing farm system. So clearly it's working and they're getting that value. But at a certain point, Dombrowski being on the other side of that, just like get the guy you want. Like just get, you know, you want to get like, I don't know, Trey Turner. All right. What's it going to take, Trey? Okay. Done. You're a Philly. Congrats. Like, just not overthinking it.
Just looking at last year's reliever free agents, like probably the best guys you could have gotten for your $3 million are like Buck Farmer and Scott Alexander, who are, you know, both fine. Scott Alexander, 2.6 ERA, and then Buck Farmer's at like a 2.5. And I know ERA is like the worst way to evaluate a reliever, but, you know, neither of those guys like strike out a ton of guys, but they've been reasonably effective. So, I don't know. I'm like, I got to take a deeper dive, but I do actually wonder if you can get like the level of upside that you could potentially have with a Swanson for $3 million in the relief market.
Last year, Aroldis Chapman, 3.8, David Robertson, 3.5. I just have the MLB trade rumors tracker in front of me here. No, this is the previous year. So this is the previous year. Chapman was 3.8 the previous year. Robertson was 3.5. Matt Strom was $3 million that year. Of course, I'm picking the good names, right? There are lots of names. There are no guarantees. If you're spending $3 million on a reliever, there are no guarantees. There's some downside risk. There's some upside possibility. But, you know, so where does Swanson land on that? I don't know. We'll see. Like, we'll let it play out. We don't have to decide. The Jays wait until November on this or December. So there's no need to make that decision. There's no need to make that decision now. You see what the pitch data looks like September 15th to 30th, really. But, I don't think it's a guarantee you're tendering him.
No, I do think that like in terms of the incredibly like marginal debates that we can and will have with this team, that is an interesting one. And I think there's a lot of other ones as well. As far when we talk about like surplus value, you hope that that's coming internally, right? Like you hope that that's coming from like Spencer Horwitz being a two-win player while making $700K. Jake Bloss, right? Like if you can, you know, and you talk to people about Jake Bloss and it's, yeah, like don't expect this guy to be an ace, you know, don't expect him to be overpowering, but it seems like there's a pretty good floor there. And there's, you know, a decent reason to believe he could develop into like a back end middle rotation starter who can throw you like 160, 170 decent innings, you know, who can just haul innings for you at like a little bit below a league average rate in terms of ERA. Like, you know, he could be like a 105 ERA plus guy with 160 innings. And like, that's not the sexiest thing, right? You got a number four, number five starter on the league minimum, but like you want to sign that guy in free agency. That's like $14, $15 million, maybe even more. So if you can get Jake Bloss doing that, and like the Blue Jays have been really encouraged, by the way, with what they've learned about Jake Bloss since they acquired him. I think that in the Kikuchi deal, for we know how it was perceived like industry-wide, but I think internally with the Jays, like at first, they were actually more excited about LaPerfido than they were about Jake Bloss.
Yeah.
But I think since they've kind of learned some stuff about Jake Loss, they've kind of realized like, oh, like this is a guy who could potentially add some strength this offseason and fill out his 6'3 frame a little bit. He's already up to 95, but maybe there's room for another tick there. And just the more he fills out, the more he adds strength, like the better you can project his durability and his ability to carry innings. And he made some real adjustments to increase his or improve his fastball command earlier this year. And that stuff has been sticky and that stuff's been really impressive. We think there's room for more gains there. Like, I think the Blue Jays believe that there's a decent chance they can develop Jake Bloss into like a number four. And that's valuable, man, especially if that guy's earning like 800K and giving you quality innings. That's valuable because, yeah, if you want to go out and sign your Kenta Maeda or your Ross Stripling or I don't know, like name the guy, that's going to be like $14, $15 million.
Yeah, exactly. And then Maeda, like it's not even good. You know, some of them yeah, aren't even good.
Example.
Yeah, no. I think it's actually a great example. Sean I think it's a great Manaya, example.
Your Kyle Gibson.
Yeah, or what the Royals did. You know, you get Lugo, you get Waka. Some of them work, some of them don't. Like it's, you know, you just don't know. Same with prospects. You don't almost know. Baseball's, man, it is so unpredictable. You just, like, that's where if you get a guy like Soto or even to a lesser extent Vladdy and they produce every year, there's so much value in that. Especially in their prime seasons where you have a reasonable idea that, yeah, they're probably not going to enter decline. Those guys are, but they're really hard to find. They're just, it's obviously really tough to build a competitive major league roster. And, you know, it's still a work in progress for the Jays. That's for sure.
Yeah. And teams that find those players are pretty reticent to give them up because they're so valuable. And like, yeah, teams don't know which players are going to develop into that. But once one does, yeah, good luck acquiring that guy.
For sure. All right. I think we can leave it there for this week on At the Letters. Thanks to everyone for listening. Thanks to Christian Ryan and Nick Andrade for producing. Thanks to Arden Zwelling for the insight. And that is going to be it. We will talk to you soon on At the Letters.